fellow Freedom fans. We're back here with the Faith and Freedom Show. I'm David Allen Carmichael. I've got Brian Moore. He lives out by Hunter's Lake, and he's got some information. He questioned what was going on in the news. Did some guy, Mr. James Rafer, just kind of, was he armed and dangerous? What's just your average kind of guy who's okay, he's a criminal, but he may not be a murdering maniac? And was the news report accurate? There were some conflicts in the news report, so he thought he'd go around and talk to his neighbors, find out if they saw the big event with Mr. Rafer trying to get away from the police, his going underwater, and then disappearing until he came floating a few days later. So we just got Brian Moore to call, and he talked to some of his neighbors. And what happened was he got, we find out more. It turns out there's a helicopter involved. Finds out that it wasn't just he went into the water. It turns out that the boat that he was in, for some reason, not only flipped over, but went into the air when it did so. So what was going on there? One witness thought that the skids from the helicopter actually hit Mr. Rafer. Another witness said, no, it wasn't that. It was just the pressure from the rotor blades being so close in the approach of in a menacing fashion that they really believed that there essentially it was the caused by the actions of the helicopter pilot. Now, we got a caller. Now, caller, thank you for calling the Eagle 104.3 FM. And what did you want to say or add to make a comment about something that Brian Moore had said earlier?
Hey, hi. How you doing, Brian?
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Brian, wasn't there something in regards to the one of the witnesses there, the guy with the binoculars? Didn't you say he had a wife and that she actually saw the skid of the helicopter come down on top of the guy's head and push him under the water?
Yes, it was her impression that the legs of the helicopter, I guess you call them the skids, pushed the fugitive actually under the water. So I was surprised to hear that because I thought it would be difficult for a helicopter to come that close and touch the water without succumbing to the waves or something.
What was the one witness you said that you can say it the way you want? I know you said it on the other show, but he said that he knew exactly why they did what they did because he used the N-word.
Well, hold on. Hold that one. You know what, guys? The only problem with that is that you've got to, that's a whole lot of conjecture.
Okay.
Okay? I mean.
Another question.
Okay.
Brian, wasn't there, didn't the sheriff's department, which is kind of strange, didn't they have a boat on a trailer out there, but they never put the police boat in the water?
Well, the first eyewitness who had binoculars said that there were three or four sheriff's deputies in individual cars, one of which had a trailer with a boat on it, but that it never moved. They never put the boat in the water when pursuing the fugitive, and then when he went under. And I don't know if, I assume that later on, an hour or two later, they used a boat for the divers to go look for him. But he raised the question, why wouldn't they have put the boat in initially, when it happened and right after it happened, you would think that that would be the logical thing to do.
Well, you know, that gives me a job now. See, I'm now responsible because before our next broadcast or by our next broadcast or by next week sometime, I've got to actually call the sheriff's department and ask that question. You silly goose, if you're going to call me with this information, now you're giving me work to do. But it's fine. It'll be part of the information that we need. Now, one of the things that you mentioned, Brian, was kind of a concern that, you know, the tough part is, do you give the police all the information about your neighbors? You don't want to unnecessarily involve your neighbors. But at the same time, if there's some kind of accountability that needs to be brought up, tell us about what your situation was with trying to contact, what your interaction with the police with regard to the witnesses.
Well, the witnesses were nervous initially about having to criticize the police, they said they would talk to the press, but they seemed to clam up even when the press came by. But now that in response to my letter to the sheriff's office to conduct an investigation, they've gotten involved and they're trying to talk to the witnesses. But the witnesses feel intimidated by the sheriffs approaching them since they have information that's critical of them. So it's a delicate area here where you're asking people to say what they saw and meet their civic duty especially when it may involve someone's rights being deprived or even somebody losing their life. And at the same time, you know, you're urging them that they have a moral responsibility to do this. So, you know, part of my effort was not only to uncover what they saw, but to urge them to tell it to the proper authorities so that we can get to the bottom of what really transpired.
Okay.
Hey, it's a shame when you have to be afraid of repercussions from a department that's supposed to be protecting you.
Well, and you know what? The funny thing is, and thanks to television and watching Walking Tall. Remember that movie that came out in the 70s about
Buford
Pusser? I mean, we know, though. And in fact, in the news recently, down in, I think in the Hollywood area, isn't the commissioner of the education or something? There's things in the news right now where people in government are being put in jail because they might be in government, but they may have a wicked heart going on at the same time. Now, let's presume, and we're going to presume, that all the police went in there with the right attitude. I will say, sometimes with a gung-ho attitude, sometimes I wonder about this policy where, for the protection of the police, sometimes I think they go in and it's possible and exert too much force with the mentality of protecting themselves. And my problem is, as I watch Andy Griffith, Andy wouldn't have done it. Andy would have gone to the pier. Of course, I know this is too idealistic, and said, "Hey there, old Mr. Rayford. Hey, Jim. You know, hey, Jim, I got you, buddy. We're going to have to go in for three hots and a cot." Yeah, I realize that isn't that would be the other side of the pendulum. So I think it is important to always, not to point blame, but to make sure we've got a mechanism of accountability that's always going on, that we don't forget that there was a helicopter that came down in such a way that blew the guy out of the boat. You know, I mean, I think that's an important piece of information that was not forthrightly shared with the media, was it?
It doesn't appear to be, no. And that was my point to it. Boy, did it surprise me to hear that. But it just made me all the more determined to see if we can get to the bottom of what happened. I mean, you know, it raises a question. In my letter to the sheriff, I asked, why didn't you use a boat? Why did you have to go to such extreme measures? They got a tip. Pasco County got a phone tip that a fugitive was fishing on the lake. That's how it all started. And then Pasco County notified Hernando County, which is where Hunter's Lake is, right in Spring Hill. And the Hernando County Sheriff's Department went down to the lake edge, and they waited there. Well, why did they wait in the open? And when he came back, saw them in plain day, and he tried to flee. You know, why couldn't they have been hiding or something and then just grabbed him when he got on the shore? Why didn't they use a boat when he did flee? You know, why did they use the helicopter in a menacing fashion? Why did the boats sit on the other side of the lake when they knew that this was going on?
Right, and I think we've all seen surveillance police helicopters, and they just loiter in a circle and observe and then direct people on the ground on what to do, where to go. They give them some tactical instructions, and that's how we normally see helicopters being used in those kind of situations. So I think your thoughts are reasonable. What were you going to say, Craig?
David and Brian, I know from watching television and seeing these helicopters fly around, I know they have cameras underneath with a FLIR pod, forward-looking infrared pod underneath, and even the guys on the ground, those helicopters, like we see them on TV and whatnot, they're always videotaping, okay?
Ah, I was just thinking that.
Yeah, so now where's the videotape of this? You would think somebody would be videotaping, if not the helicopter on the ground, but you know the helicopter is videotaping it.
Well, you know what? You just gave me something again to do, Craig. Thank you.
Sorry.
No, now I've...
Something, too, that canoe or kayak, whatever they want to call it, obviously that belonged to one of the neighbors over there. What happened to that? If it exploded in the air, did the police take it and hide all the evidence on what happened to that helicopter? Because if it was damaged by the helicopter, it's going to show up on the boat.
And it may not show up. Again, if it's one of those enclosed plastic kayaks, I could see it with the power of that rotor. If you've ever been under that, I mean, it's lifting a several thousand pound machine in the air.
Well, what it's doing is the air from the helicopter is bouncing off the water and getting under the kayak.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
So, hey, thank you for your call, Craig. We're going to go back to Brian. Hey, Brian, so at this point, we've got a few more minutes here. Obviously, I appreciate your getting in touch with me and letting me know about this. And obviously, folks, Brian, could you said you were willing to give people your phone number if they came up with information. Now, you may or may not want to call Brian on this, but Brian, you're going to give him the phone number, and then I'm going to make a comment about what to do with it. Go ahead and tell us your contact information.
Okay.
Wait. Before I say that, Brian,
Say 686-9936.
Okay, 686-9936.
Correct.
Okay, now this is the thing, folks. I was thinking about what Brian did. What you don't necessarily want to do is call Brian. What you want to do is call the Sheriff's Department, and it's the Internal Affairs. And we've only got a few minutes, but he can tell us that he's told me that the Internal Affairs are looking into it. If you have some information, contact Internal Affairs. Contact them first. Not me, not Brian, not the news media. Now, I think it's good information. You've heard it on the news. If you got some information, want to share it with Brian, you can certainly do that at 352, of course, 686-9936, 686-9936. You can call me at 888-850-1872. We only got a couple of minutes, Brian, but tell us about your contact with Internal Affairs.
Well, the Sergeant Kathleen Reed is in charge of the investigation, and she said that they would determine whether they wanted to make an investigation based on her collecting the facts. So I said, you mean to tell me that your interviewing of their eyewitnesses isn't part of the investigation? And she said, no, they would make a determination whether they conduct an investigation based on what's conveyed to her. Initially, they said to me that they would not conduct an investigation unless the family member complained. However, I guess they've made an adjustment based on what I said in the letter, that they would consider conducting an investigation if the witness accounts seem to be of a serious nature.
Okay. Well, hey, Brian Moore, I just want to say thank you very much for contacting me. Thank you for checking it out. Again, folks, this seems like we're just, you know, kind of stirring up the pot. We don't want to. I'm trying to think the legal term. What did you want to say something else, Brian?
No, I was just laughing about your expression about stirring up the pot. Well, that's, you know, you do stir up a pot, but, you know, it's, I think, for very legitimate reasons.
Right.
And that is to find out if somebody, you know, why does a person who's fishing, who is a fugitive, have to die? Why do we have to go from one extreme to another? That was the question. That's really the bottom line.
Okay. Hey, Brian, thank you. We're going to have to cut to a break. Thank you very much. And if please stay on the line for a minute, because I want to talk to you about a future engagement that we're going to have on a political discussion, if you'll be available for that. So just hang out on the line while I'm closing up here. And folks,
thank you, David, very much.
Okay, great. Hey, folks, you're listening to Eagle 104.3 FM. It's shifting to Freedom, okay? 104.3 FM. Keep tuning in. I'm David Allen Carmichael. This is a Faith and Freedom show. I do try to talk about the issues of the day on a constitutional basis, a biblical basis, the basis of right versus wrong. We don't want to just bring sensations here. We'd like to talk about substance and how it affects you and what we can do to fulfill our civic duty. We've got to love God, and if we love God, we're going to love our neighbor as ourselves. Sometimes loving our neighbor as ourselves makes us a bit uncomfortable, because sometimes we have to stop what we're doing and put ourselves out for the sake of our neighbor. In some cases, it is contacting the sheriff's department. Sometimes it's irritating our next-door neighbor who doesn't want to be involved. So we've got to make those determinations, and obviously, you know, my shtick in this whole thing is obviously we're accountable to God for what we do. So keep tuning into the Eagle 104.3 FM. And of course, I want you to check out our website at faithfreedoms.org. And of course, I am broadcasting, streaming live by video there. And become a member, join the Liberty Works Radio Network, and we'll be back.